Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate Pick Your Own Farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Knoy, and this is The Exchange. This week, some of the Democrats running for president will appear on stage to debate the ideas at the center of the 2020 campaign. At this pivotal moment in the cycle, where are the hearts and minds of Democratic voters? Granite Staters have a rare opportunity to see these candidates as they hold house parties and rallies here. But which candidates are breaking through, and how are they doing it? Today on The Exchange, a panel of undecided Democratic voters tells us what's helping them make up their minds, and you can join in. What questions about the issues do you have? How are you making up your mind? And what, if anything, is an immediate disqualifier for you? Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Our guests today are Jerry King, social psychologist and organizational consultant based in Concord. She and her husband have held 8 house parties for Democratic candidates so far this season. Alessandra Murray, a student at SNHU. She holds 2 library jobs and lives in Manchester. She also volunteers with Rights and Democracy. Eric Ratanoff, founder and chief storyteller with Story First, a strategic storytelling firm. And Christy St. Laurent, physical therapist and a member of the New Hampshire State Committee on Aging and chair of the Wyndham Democratic Town Committee. Thank you very, very much, everybody, for being here. Really appreciate it.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
And again, listeners, give us a call if you have thoughts on this Democratic field of candidates and how you're going about making up your mind. That's the big thing. 1-800-892-6477. So we're going to start today by talking about that big how to make a decision on which candidate to support. And there are so many of them this time around. We don't have ranked choice voting here in New Hampshire, so got to choose one. We'll go around the table here and get your insights, starting with you, Jerry. How are you going about making your decision?
Well, this is the first time I think I haven't decided early. I am delighted so many people are running because so many good messages are getting out. I think it's important that we hear from them and hear from the people that support them. I am very concerned about how we talk about who might win. It's really important that we don't say someone's too old or a woman can't win or a person of color can't win again, because that tells CEOs and supervisors not to hire and promote those people. It's like disparaging jokes. It gets into the back of people's minds. So I'm hoping that people won't make their decision based on that. Certainly not early on.
And so what are you making your decision based
so
on?
So I'm not at this point making a decision. As you pointed out, we've had 8 people at our house. Hopefully we'll have more. I want to listen to all of them. And it's been fascinating because although they're very different, every single one of them has made a terrific impression. And the crowds in our house have walked away saying, I didn't expect to like that person, and I really do.
Something about seeing them in person,
there
I guess.
Is something. And that's one of the benefits of New Hampshire, of course. We get to do that.
And Jerry, have you always voted Democratic?
In the presidential election, I have. Sometimes with local legislators, I have not. But mostly I have, and my parents did as well. When I mentioned New Hampshire and how different it is, when Obama was at our house, we sent pictures to friends out of state and they thought we photoshopped him in.
Hard to believe, but totally believable if you're from New Hampshire.
It certainly is.
Eric, how about you? How are you going about making your decision?
I think for me, it's twofold. One, I want to read and absorb as much as I can. So I'm kind of all over the internet and trying to learn as much as I can about where the candidates stand and what their track records are and what's important to them. And then I'm taking advantage of the fact that we're here in New Hampshire and really trying to see as many as I can. At this point, I've seen 6, which is more than I've seen in any previous cycle. but still haven't even seen a quarter of the field. But I feel like seeing them in person gives you the opportunity to process what they're saying and what's important to them in a way that's really different than reading on the internet when there's lots of distractions enticing you to click away. So I'm trying to balance that.
And what about you? Have you always voted Democratic in the presidential elections?
In the presidential, yes.
Yeah. Alessandra, what about you? How are you making up your mind?
My big thing I'm looking for is who I trust to actually follow through with these policies they're suggesting. We have a lot of people jumping on bandwagons for issues that they didn't support a few years ago. And it's important to me that there's a candidate who has a track record of supporting progressive issues and what the people want, and that they're not just playing to popularity right now, but that they actually believe the stuff they're saying.
So you're looking at some kind of ideological consistency among the candidates over time. Okay. And have you always voted Democrat in the presidential election?
I have not. I was raised super conservatively. So my first election, which was Obama versus Romney, I actually voted in the middle because I couldn't make up my mind between the two. And then since then, I voted Democratic. But.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Christy? How are you making up your mind?
By going to see as many of the candidates as I can. And I've seen 17 Democrats and one Republican running. And also, as I'm listening to the plans that they're rolling out, looking for plans that seem doable, but also someone who has a plan for how they're going to get that accomplished once they get elected. It's not a dictatorship that we're electing them to. They have to try to get their plans through Congress and onto their desk. So I want to see not only are they projecting a plan that's doable, but something that they have a plan to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that speaks to an issue that some of these candidates have to account for, especially if they don't have any kind of experience in government. And there are a few candidates like that. How are you going to be a politician and draw up compromises or work with people who don't agree with you or have constituencies that are going to put pressure on them to not agree with them? So to your point, Christy, I'd like to ask everybody else, how important is it that the candidate that the Democrats nominate have some kind of political skill to build compromise and to work the legislature or work Congress? We'll start with you, Eric.
I think at this stage of the game, it's really easy to have soaring rhetoric and really talk about issues at a theoretical level. And for me, it is important that there is some track record that shows that they've been able to work on these issues, whether it's at the state level or whether it's in Congress, and that they're thinking about those challenges that are very real to getting things done.
Mm-hmm. Jerry?
I'm not sure it's just political skill. It's facilitative skill. And that may include people who have not been in politics before because they have those particular skills. One of the selling points for me for Barack Obama is when he said he was going to surround himself with people who did not agree with him. And we know Lincoln did the same thing. So it's very important, I believe, to listen. I challenge myself a lot. Sometimes it's an identity crisis. I feel like I facilitate people for a living, and there are times when I have a hard time now having a conversation with people who support people that I'm concerned about. So we really have to open ourselves up to that. And it's so easy when you surround yourself with people who think just like you do to think that's how the world works, and that's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Alessandra? How important is that kind of compromise skill to you?
Oh, it's extremely important. I'm definitely looking for someone with experience, political experience, and for a candidate, because I just think it's so important to prove that they can do the job that they have done, similar jobs. Right now, we've had so many issues with our party splitting and also splitting apart from the other party, and we need someone who's going to be able to bring people together and actually pass legislation.
Mm-hmm. You also brought up an interesting point earlier, Alessandra, about ideological purity. And I'm wondering what you think the capacity, your own personal capacity and maybe the capacity of the party is for people who have changed their minds on big issues. Maybe start with you, Christy.
Well, similar to Alessandra, I was raised with somewhat of a conservative background. So my ideologies have changed, have evolved, as President Obama had talked about. And so that's one of the good things about being able to go to see people in person. It's a little harder to fudge in person. And so I I look to see if it's genuine and there's a logical progression, that it's not just looking at the polls that we're going to be talking about later, that there's a true nexus for how they came to those changes.
Jerry?
It's interesting you ask that, because an NPR reporter asked at a gathering, what do you look for in a candidate? And one of the things I look for is if they're playing the audience. So when someone asks a provocative question, do they answer even though they know they may get some pushback? Or do they look around and say, what should the answer be? I'd much rather have them be straightforward, be honest, and deal with people not agreeing with them.
Eric?
I think it's human to change your mind, and that as we age, we get more information and we learn more things and we get more experience and interaction with people who can change our minds. And so I think I'm perfectly comfortable with someone who's changed their mind, but I want to know how they got there, and not that it's because of the political wins or because they feel like it's going to help them. I think one of the candidates that's particularly interesting in this regard is Elizabeth Warren, because of where she came from, which was a very conservative background. And part of her backstory really is around starting to see things differently as she started to look at bankruptcy. And so that change to me is well earned and makes sense. And she can explain the rationale behind that changing an ideology. And that just shows that she's put in the thought and the time.
So back to you on that, Alessandra. You said that ideological purity is important to you. But like Eric has said, would you consider a candidate who has made a reasonable, in your view, explanation of how he or she changed their mind?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think there's room for growth. Like, even my politics have changed in the past, 2-4 years. I guess I just like to see when that change happened, and what caused it for them. I want a candidate that's not just saying like, oh, yes to universal health care, yes to legalization of marijuana. I want someone who's been supporting that legislation in their own state, who has proven that they're actually on the side of those issues and that they're not just saying it now based on polling results.
Listeners, we're having a conversation today about 2020 Democratic candidates, but specifically, how you're going about making up your mind. We'll talk about issues as well, and we'll talk about the language that we use to talk about candidates and their positions on various policies. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6444. 477. You can also send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Mary, in an email, said to us that any candidate who does not have a detailed proposal for addressing the climate crisis and a history of strong action on the issue, that's a disqualifier for her. So thanks very much, Mary. We appreciate the email. I want to ask you about media, both mainstream sources and social media. How important, or rather, what are the sources of information that you are using? We'll start with you, Christy, to sort of gather all the information that you think is relevant about the candidates.
Sure. So a little bit at their websites, but that's kind of the shiny, pretty way to learn about them. But also Twitter really is the way that I find out a lot of things. I don't have a lot of time to watch the news, to watch TV, or to read. So I see what other people that I follow on Twitter, what they say, and then I look at the articles that they recommend, and sometimes some of the comments, if I can stomach them, after the articles, and try to pull in sort of both sides that way.
So you're reading the comments section, even though most people advise you not to.
I try.
Yeah. So what about you, Alessandra? Where are you getting your information?
I also use Twitter a lot and Instagram, actually. I follow people with a wide variety of political leanings, and I like to read from their different perspectives what they think of different candidates and issues, because it helps me kind of think more critically about things instead of just assuming my own biases on an issue or a person.
Mm-hmm. Jerry?
Certainly the news, and I try to force myself to watch news casters that I might not enjoy most of the time. That's very hard to do. I'm not terribly successful at that. Read a lot of newspapers, listen to the radio, including NHPR and NPR. New Hampshire has this wonderful situation, though. We get to meet them personally as well. So it's fascinating when you hear them personally and you think, wait a second, that's not what was said to the newspaper. That was not what was said to the media. We're in a very unique position to be able to compare those.
Mm-hmm. Eric, what do you think?
I would agree with that. I feel like the personal interaction and the chance to hear an extended deep dive into what the candidates are thinking is really valuable. But there's only so many of those that I've seen. And so certainly for me, I feel like social media is sort of like the portal to the news sources that I want to read. So a lot of New York Times and Washington Post and places like that where they're looking. But I'm not looking to rely on any one source as much as kind of find the right balance.
Mm-hmm. So for those of you who are using Twitter, who are you following to find your information about the candidates? Christy?
Some of the NHPR reporters. Reporters from a variety of news networks, and then different New Hampshire celebrities, politicians, and national news.
Mm-hmm. Same for you, Alessandra?
Yeah, some of that. I also follow a lot of congressional candidates, or not candidates, congressmen and women, and I like to see what they're saying on the issues and on candidates. And I follow a lot of grassroots organizers, whether it be the organizations or the individuals, and get their feedback.
Jerry, I wanted to follow up on something you mentioned. Can you talk about one of those instances when there was a discrepancy between what was covered in the media on a candidate and what was said in person?
Yes. If you don't mind, I'm not going to tell you who the candidates are who do that. What I can tell you is when there are unanticipated questions. So if I were staff for a candidate, I'd say expect this, this, and this. Again, they come to New Hampshire, and if they haven't been here before, they're surprised. When a question is asked, and usually if it's a profound question, it's asked in somewhat biased way. I don't mean biased in a negative necessarily. So what do you think about climate change may translate to? Certainly you agree with the fact that we have climate issues. We haven't had any Democrats who have said no to that. But what I'm talking about is a very subtle pause. You know, how is this going to be received? And I'm really impressed when people just say, here's who I am, talk back at me.
Mm-hmm. But it's, again, you get something extra when you actually see them in person rather than
through the filter
in the media.
No question.
Christy.
Yeah, so I was at a candidate event, and again, I won't name the candidate, but the news story that came out, there was an AP story about the event, and it read very negatively, but being in the room, that's not the feeling that I got from the people that were there listening to the candidate. So it was a little unfortunate that that was the case for that candidate, but, you know, it's interesting, as you were saying, actually being at the event and then just reading about it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you all about your circles of friends and how you talk about candidates with your circle? Do you find that you have a diverse set of friends? Are they sort of in line with your line of thinking? How would you describe it? Maybe start with you, Jerry.
You can tell because I have an embarrassing look on my face.
You're smiling, so I think you have something interesting to say.
Well, when we were at the first inauguration, Gene Robinson, who was the bishop here in Concord, was one of the speakers, and he kept saying, you have to talk to the other, you have to talk to the other. Afterwards, I said to my husband, we have to talk to the other. Oh, my gosh, we don't know any others. And I was mortified by that. I do not choose. I don't interview people and say, I only want to talk to you if you're politically like me. It's been very interesting to me that we don't have a lot of diversity politically. We have diversity in other ways, but not politically.
So how do you go about finding those people
tough.
If you don't interview them
it's
like
hard.
That?
Yes. I mean, would you go on the street and say, please tell me you don't think like I do?
Eric, have you encountered this as well?
I think I'm probably more isolated than I should be, and I probably get more diverse perspectives from reading than from personal interaction. And some of that is, I think if I am, I feel like we're in such a tense political moment right now that if I've got someone and I'm not sure where they are, I might avoid the topic rather than risk some of that tension. And I'm not so sure that that's a great way to go about doing things, but I think that's been more of my approach.
Certainly difficult to sort of just bring politics up out of nowhere
right. If
you are talking with a group of people out of the blue, you know?
Right. And there's definitely people that I sort of have had those conversations before and I know where their leanings are. I've seen things that they've shared on social media. And so it's easy to bring up a conversation there. Outside of that sort of lane, it's a little bit more challenging.
Mm. Alessandra, what about your circle of friends?
It's pretty broad, actually, and diverse. The way I was raised, again, was super conservatively, so I have a lot of longtime friends and family that have very different opinions on issues than I do. And I only recently stopped going to church, and everyone at the church, again, had very different opinions than I did. Even within my Democratic or progressive friend group, there's a lot of variety and opinion and, like, strength of, I don't know, strength on certain issues. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And are you still able to talk with those people with whom you disagree? Has it remained civil and sort of engaging?
For the most part. Yeah. I definitely don't avoid any topics. I'm, like, very firm on what I believe. So if something comes up or someone says something to poke the bear, I'm going to speak back. But for the most part, I've had civil conversations with everybody, and it doesn't usually get out of hand.
So one of the things you mentioned is I'm chair of the Democratic Town Committee in Windham, which is historically a pretty Republican town. So by default, as chair, I have to sort of wear that on my sleeve so people know that I'm a Democrat. By just having friends in Windham, I have a lot of Republican friends. So politics doesn't come up often, but when it does, I find that I definitely learn a lot by listening to people with different opinions. It may not change my opinion sometimes, but it helps to understand where they're coming from, because just like listening to all the candidates, there is a reason behind it. And then if you can listen to that reason and why they feel the way they do, then you can have a conversation about it.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask about a few things about these candidates in particular, or about what you would prefer, starting with the issue of whether or not someone is a veteran. How important is that to you? We'll start with you, Eric. Is that important to you?
It's a plus, but it's not a qualifier or disqualifier. I think it adds a perspective and an insight and a set of experiences that are valuable, but it's not a make or break qualification for me.
Is there anybody at this table for whom it is, Jerry?
Well, I agree with you, Eric. Generationally, we have to be very aware of this. I come from a generation where there was a draft, mm-hmm. and so just about all males were veterans, except those that avoided it for what I consider good reasons, and others by default. We have younger generations where there was not a draft, and so they are not veterans, not because they're anti-veteran, but because that wasn't an opportunity they took advantage of. So I think we have to be careful when we look at the various generations, how we decide that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, so three of the youngest candidates in the field this time around are veterans.
That's interesting, Pete
Buttigieg,
isn't
Tulsi
it?
Gabbard, and Seth Moulton.
Yeah.
They're all in, I think Seth Moulton is the oldest of the crew, and he's 40, I believe. But does it matter to either of you, Alessandra or Christy?
Yeah, I agree with Eric. It's not a disqualifier, but it's interesting.
What about candidates... sort of geographical location, where they are from. Like, for example, I've heard some Democrats say that they think it would be wise to choose a Democrat who comes from a state that Trump won, to sort of see if they could turn a red state blue. Okay, I'm seeing some sort of subtle head shakes at the table here. Maybe not the best strategy, Eric.
I think that ties into the whole electability conversation, which to me is really short-sighted and frustrated. I feel like someone the Democrats should pick the candidate that they feel will do the best job leading the country and not worry about electability, because if this person can win in a field of 25, there's some electability already there. And so I think trying to strategically say, well, it would be nice to get this state or that state, that misses the point of what the country as a whole is looking for.
Mm-hmm. We've got a question, an email from Steve in Concord. He says, are you finding that you are making decisions by process of elimination or inclusion relative to who you give money to or not, and whose email blasts you're deleting from your email boxes? So that's the question from Steve. Maybe the gist of it, process of elimination, is that how you're making your decision, Jerry?
For me, it's not time to make a decision yet. And so and this is so unusual for me. So understand that I'm getting used to myself here. So no, I'm not deciding that. And if I go to an event, I do contribute because I'm glad they're contributing. So no, it's not I'm not at that place yet.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else making decisions on process of elimination, Alessandra?
Again, like Jerry, I'm not really getting to that point yet. I'm still comfortable in a stage where I'm getting emails from multiple candidates and donating to multiple candidates and seeing multiple candidates. I think we still have time to see where things go and who sticks to the issues.
Mm-hmm. So far during this campaign cycle among the Democrats, negativity has been kept to mostly a minimum, it seems. Maybe that's typical for this early in the stage. Maybe we'll see some negativity on the debate stage. I'm wondering how you feel, how important it is to you that these candidates stay positive about each other.
For me, it's very important because when you get into the negative, it takes away from the issues and the things that we should be talking about in the campaign. So I would much rather hear what someone plans to do and what their hopes are for the future and what their plans are versus any attacks on other candidates.
We don't want to replicate what we dislike. And so one of the criticisms that I think is an important criticism is the lack of civility and the lack of bravery that's been going on for the last 2 years. Please, 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 candidates, make sure that you do not replicate that.
Eric, agree?
I want to see a positive campaign, but I don't want to see people shy away from genuine policy debate. And I think that there's naturally going to be disagreements about the merits of certain policy. And so if candidate A sees that they've got some critique of candidate B's approach, it makes sense to put that out there.
Alessandra.
Yeah, I basically agree with Eric, where if someone's making like personal attacks or getting angry directly at another candidate, like I don't see that being productive. But I am totally okay with one candidate calling out another for lack of virtue, like consistency on an issue. I think that's okay. And I do want to see that on the stage because we have a bunch of people kind of saying the same thing right now, and they should be helping voters by pointing out the flaws or inconsistencies in someone else's logic or plans.
So the tenor of the criticism matters a lot, but you're not saying no criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Listeners, this is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the decision-making process. We'll also talk about which issues are most important to our panelists, and it's a great time to call now and tell us which issues are most important to you. What is the issue or idea that inspires you to get out and vote? The number is 1-800-892-6477. You can also email exchange@nhpr.org. Stay close. We'll be right back.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
I'm Peter Biello, and this is The Exchange. And tomorrow on the program, it's the Summer Book Show. Our regular guest booksellers will be on the program. Share with us the titles you think are worth sharing with your fellow listeners. You can send your recommendations now by email, exchange@nhpr.org, and tune in for The Exchange tomorrow live at 9. Today, though, we're talking with a panel of Democratic voters. It's our attempt to take the temperature of the party faithful ahead of this week's two Democratic presidential debates, and we want you to be part of this conversation. What issue has lit a fire underneath you ahead of New Hampshire's first-in-the-nation primary? Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call. We'll bring your voice into the conversation if we can, 1-800-892-6477. With me in the studio today, Christy St. Laurent, physical therapist and a member of the New Hampshire State Committee on Aging and chair of the Windham Democratic Town Committee. Eric Ratanoff, founder and chief storyteller with Story First, a strategic storytelling firm. Alessandra Murray, a student at SNHU. She holds two library jobs and lives in Manchester. She also volunteers with Rights and Democracy. And Jerry King, social psychologist and organizational consultant based in Concord. Listeners, give us a call to join the conversation, 1-800-892-6477. And before we go back to the panel, I just want to say, first of all, that NHPR's newsroom is inviting listeners to participate in a survey on the station's primary coverage. You can find that at nhpr.org. Just click on NH Primary 2020. And let's start by going to the phones and talking to David and Ware. David, thank you very much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you. My wife and I have gone to hear 6 of the candidates, and so far, Julian Castro appeals to us because of his ability to answer questions directly and thoughtfully. And his mention of prison reform and climate and environment issues amongst the top issues, we were put off somewhat by both Warren and Harris because they seem to be promising particular perks for specific groups, like Harris proposing a tax benefit for teachers, who some of whom may need it and some of whom may not need it any more than anyone else. Warren, with the student loan forgiveness program, which again, some people very much need that break on student loan debt, and other people who took out loans may be doing just fine. So those didn't seem sensible.
And David, can I ask, how important for you was it to see the candidates in person?
Very important. Yes, you can really get a sense of how they interact with people when they're thinking on their feet, instead of giving canned responses. Do they make sense?
Well, David, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Listeners, give us a call if you'd like to join the conversation. The number 1-800-892-6477. So it seems like David was in agreement with most people at the table here that seeing the candidates in person, very important. You almost get a different sense of who they are when you see them face-to-face as opposed to through the filter of the media. I want to ask you about another way the candidates and their performance is sort of being filtered, and that's through polls. I'd like to get a sense from all of you how important polls are for you and how closely you follow them, if at all. Maybe start with you, Alessandra.
It doesn't really have any bearing on my opinion. I think that we've put too much weight on polls in the past, and like Eric mentioned before, electability is a big thing. I keep talking with my friends because a lot of people are saying, like, oh, we should vote for this candidate because they're the most electable. They're going to push the least buttons, and I think we create the majority, and when you give your vote away by just deciding to vote for who you think is the most likely to win based on polling or party data, then you are making your vote not count because you could have given that majority, that electability, to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Eric?
I think especially this early, the polls feel like a distraction. I'm not really interested in them at all, and I feel like they're taking away from substantive conversations about the issues and about the candidates' stances on different things. And it's frustrating to me how often the mainstream media takes the horse race angle and leads with the poll numbers, and I don't think that really serves the voters. I think it may drive clicks, but I don't think it really helps people think about what's happening, because we're really early in this game, and so many people's voices haven't been heard.
Mm-hmm. Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, has been leading the polls, and some attribute that simply to name recognition. People know who he is for the bare fact that he's been in government for so long, and he was vice president for 8 years. He has attracted some criticism due to some comments he's made, and some of his past positions have not served him well in 2019. I wanted to ask you how you think the conversation about Joe Biden, Jerry, is going to shape the race going forward.
I think the conversation is really important. I am not surprised when someone has done something he or she should not have done, or in this day and age, it would not be acceptable. It's terribly important to apologize, say, I'm sorry, I had a different perspective then. And back to the polls, we have to remember that some of the people who have won in the past had the lowest polls when they started out. So I think you're absolutely right, Peter. Name recognition is what pushes people up at the moment.
I wouldn't say that personally, but I'm just relaying what many have said.
Yes, I think that's true.
Certainly.
Okay, so not Peter.
Yes.
Whomever said that.
It is a popular sentiment, the top three candidates in a lot of the polls are those that may be the most familiar to voters, especially in New Hampshire. Bernie Sanders is often up there, for example, too. And he, of course, won the New Hampshire primary the last time around. So any other thoughts on polls or Joe Biden before we move on? No? All right. I just wanted to make sure. We've got issues to talk about. And I wanted to ask you all, what issues are most important to you? Maybe start with you, Christy. What issue would you say is most important in this election cycle?
Kind of two. Healthcare, obviously, as a physical therapist and working on the state committee on aging and following closely the struggles that people, as they age, are facing with the cost of health care, the cost of long-term care, and just how, as a country, we're going to wrestle with that. So I've been following the proposals as they're coming out from the candidates, and I think it's spurred some really important debate, a lot of which, though, is being driven by slogans. Medicare for all, when you really dig in, each of the candidates that is proposing that has a different variation on it. So I think it's kind of going with the popularity of Medicare to win support. But if you really dig into what that might mean, it's very different. It could be very different whether it's truly Medicare for all or a changed Medicare for all or if it's Medicare available to all. And so it's I think it's a very interesting debate to be having.
So is that what you're going to be listening for when the debate starts, how they plan on setting their Medicare for all plan apart from the rest?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Alessandra, your thoughts on the top issue for you?
If I have to pick one.
You have to, say what you got to say.
Well, okay. So I'll just say, ditto everything about Medicare for all.
Okay.
And climate change and climate justice is a big one for me. Nothing else matters if we don't save the planet. And I want someone who's going to be aggressive with that kind of legislation because we need to be doing something now. We don't have time to be pandering and the other side with minor legislative bills. We need to be passing major legislation and fixing the communities that have already started to fall apart because of climate change. Another big issue for me is racial justice, which would involve mass decarceration, ending the war on drugs. I believe that we need to have a conversation about reparations, not necessarily that I'm not expecting candidates to have policies on it right now, but I do think they need to be open to that, and that it's not their position as a generally white field to be saying that they shouldn't be having that conversation when that's what citizens want and they deserve it.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jerry? Top issue.
And I can't. They're all number one.
They're all number one.
I will say them really quickly. Certainly climate inclusion is very important to me, which includes how we have to deal with the horrific treatment that we are now doling out to immigrants and people trying to get into this country. Healthcare and Supreme Court choices, which is connected to a woman's right to choose and so many other issues that I'm terribly concerned about.
Mm-hmm. And Eric?
I think the way that I would frame my number one issue is economic inequality. And that's something that, for me, ties into a lot of other issues. And I think it's important to think about sort of a constellation. So economic inequality impacts everything from healthcare and criminal justice to, the way we traditionally think about the economy and jobs, but also education, student loans. A lot of those things are both driven by the framing of economic inequality, but also reinforce it.
Mm-hmm. Christy?
Yeah, so I had a second issue that now that everybody has spoken, it bubbled to the top last cycle in the last presidential election, and that was the Citizens United decision and the idea of getting money out of politics, because really solving any of these problems is really going to take removing that, the big money that is speaking louder than all of our individual votes. So that's kind of an underlying, I want to see a candidate that's still talking about addressing that.
We've got some emails from listeners. And again, listeners, if you want to join the conversation, send us a note by email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Bob from Brentwood wrote in to say, one of the most important issues I'm looking to be addressed by candidates is that of student loan debt. Canceling or reducing student loan debt would be one of the best ways to not only give hope to my generation, but give a boost to the economy by allowing me to spend $1,100 more per month on rent, shopping, and savings rather than going toward my student loan payments. He continues, I'd like to learn more from each candidate on how they can help free people like me with $75,000 in loans so we can become contributing members of the economy rather than just paying interest. So that's the comment from Bob. Does that resonate with anybody at this table? Jerry, you're nodding?
I'm sitting next to a student, so she should have
precedence. Maybe Alessandra? What do you think?
I mean, yeah, definitely. That is an important issue to me. I am only a year into my degree right now, and I put it off for so long because I was terrified of just going into the system that I knew was going to choke me with debt. It's just, there's just no other way. You just have to accept that you're going to have thousands and thousands of dollars in debt at the end. So that definitely resonates with me. I definitely am looking for that in a candidate. Not necessarily, I'm not expecting like total forgiveness or anything like that, but I do think it's kind of crazy that America is like the wealthiest country in the world doesn't have a form of free college, like even if it's just community college. I think that interest rates are out of control. College loans are essentially predatory. Like at this point, there's like more student debt than there is money to pay off the student debt. And that just shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that makes a lot of headlines in the national media or in border states is immigration. And I didn't hear too much from any of you on the issue of immigration, but I did want to ask you about it. What are you looking to hear from the Democratic candidates this cycle about immigration? Alessandra?
I'm actually a first-generation American. My mom came here on asylum when she was 10. And so it's very important to me. And I do feel like I'm not hearing as much from candidates as I would like to be hearing. A lot of people are just saying, like, no wall, like, and the prison, you know, the prison camps and all this stuff. But they're not putting forth any policies or legislation that I think they will actually, like, enforce.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of specific policy idea would you want to hear? Like, for example, amnesty. That's a hot button one. But is that something that you would support, or is there something else that you would like? Amnesty for those who are in the country illegally?
Yeah, I do believe in that, at least at the very least. I think we also need to be funneling more money in general towards that. We need to be sending more judges down there to expedite the process of becoming a citizen. A lot of people don't understand really how long and convoluted the process is. It's really difficult. Like, I remember my mom becoming a citizen. It took her that long, and she had a mom for a lawyer. Like, so I think also we need to be ending, obviously, the separation of the families at the border and such. But generally, we need to be just changing the narrative across the country of the demonization of these people and helping them understand that they really are fleeing terrible situations. And even just the way asylum works, like you can't claim asylum when you're still in your own country. You have to show that you like that the situation was desperate enough that you had to leave it immediately. So just a general simplification of our immigration process, supporting DACA for future years, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's extremely important.
Okay. And so regarding the debates this week, how do you feel about whether or not these candidates should address President Trump directly? Are some candidates better off mentioning him, or are they better off avoiding him altogether? Which do you think is the better idea? Maybe we'll start with you, Jerry.
I think they have to address the behavior. And whether that's President Trump or those who are letting that happen. I understand that if they bring that up, they're afraid that somehow the perception for people who are not sure if they want to support a Democrat will turn them off. We can't deny it. Complacency is not an option, as far as I'm concerned. And we've seen this in past history in other countries. We cannot continue to let happen what is going on right now.
Alessandra.
I agree with that, although I do want to say I just don't want this to just turn into a, like, I'm not Trump. Like, we all know,
I agree.
We all know Trump is bad, and I don't want the debates or candidates to be fixating on him as a person, especially when he is not the only problem we have right now. I think that this election has the potential to distract people from also the importance of, like, the Senate elections that we have going on and local elections, and we need to be facing all of our adversaries everywhere, and it's not just Trump.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify what you said, would you say we all believe Trump is bad? You're referring to Democrats, people registered Democrats?
Yeah, and I mean, most of the population, I think, at this point, a lot of the Republicans I know even say they won't vote for him again.
Okay. Christy, you wanted to weigh in.
Sure. So I guess what I would be looking for is for candidates amongst themselves, but then as well as with the current administration, to contrast how their administration would be different. How would they differ than what we have right now for foreign policy, for getting rid of regulations in the EPA and in the banking industry and tax policy and just priorities in general? So that's what I'd like to hear. I think in terms of behavior and Twitter and that kind of thing, there's plenty of staunch supporters who would like to see that changed about the president as well. So I don't think it really even has to go there. But I'd like to see, because there will be others who are not Democrats who are maybe looking for someone else to vote for this time around. So if they can contrast what they're proposing, how that would be different from what we have now, I think that would be helpful.
This is The Exchange on NHPR, and today in the program, we're talking with a panel of Democratic voters ahead of the first debates between the candidates. When we come back, a look at the language the party uses to describe itself and a broader look at the state of the party. We're going to look at terms like socialism, progressive, liberal, and others. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. If you have thoughts on that language, you can also email exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back.
Listen to NHPR to follow the events that affect many of us here in New Hampshire and beyond our borders, from the debates over immigration to rising sea levels to health care. Hey, I'm Lauren Chulgen, politics and policy reporter for NHPR. I'm asking you to contribute now to support your source for high-quality journalism. Your gift today will ensure that NHPR remains your reliable news source in the year to come. Contribute now at nhpr.org, and thanks.
I'm Peter Biello, and this is The Exchange on NHPR. And today we're talking with undecided Democratic voters ahead of the first round of debates. Those are scheduled for Wednesday and Thursday of this week. And we want to hear from you as well about your thoughts on the state of the party. Are you happy about where the Democratic Party is? Where are the weak spots that need improving? Email exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Here in the studio with me to discuss all this is Alessandra Murray, a student at SNHU. She also holds two library jobs, and she volunteers for Rights and Democracy. Eric Ratanoff, founder and chief storyteller with Story First, a strategic storytelling firm. Christy St. Laurent, physical therapist and a member of the New Hampshire State Committee on Aging and chair of the Windham Democratic Town Committee. And Jerry King, social psychologist and organizational consultant based in Concord. She and her husband have held 8 house parties for Democratic candidates so far this season. So I wanted to bring in one comment from Brian, who sent us an email. Brian says, I'd like to hear how we can, in a capitalistic society, restore some fairness to our financial systems. Also, how can we reduce the amount of influence money has on our political system? That's the concern from Brian. Your concerns, of course, welcome if you'd like to weigh in. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. So I want to talk a little bit about language, this part of the program, because terms are being bandied about and it's worth getting a handle on them. One term we hear a lot is the word socialism. Some Democrats also take issue with this term. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont identifies himself as a democratic socialist. Maybe we'll start with you, Alessandra, on the term democratic socialist. What does that term mean to you?
I mean, generally, it's a socialist who's willing to make compromises and work within a capitalistic system. Someone like Bernie or AOC, they have socialist ideas, policies, agendas, but they're willing to work within the American system that we've created to implement those ideas into our society.
So under a democratic socialist, it's not true that the government owns the means of production, correct? Or maybe you tell me.
So to me, like a socialist is someone who believes the worker owns the means of production, that it's more people-based. With democratic socialists, they are more willing to work within a capitalistic system to those socialist ends, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And is that difficult to talk about among the Democrats, the idea of socialism and a candidate being forthright with their socialist ideas?
I think it can be difficult just in the fact that our society has kind of demonized the terms socialist and communist, and a lot of people use those as insults or as like scary words but don't even know what it means. So it can be hard to talk about those ideas or those kinds of policies and have like any real conversation because of the connotations people have about those.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's about what it's come to mean. When you're in other countries, people are shocked and surprised that we don't have health care for all, They're shocked and surprised that we don't have free education. Those include countries that would not define themselves as socialist countries. So, yes, we can't use the term easily anymore because of what it's come to mean, but we can still talk about the kinds of things we've been mentioning that people deserve without worrying that somehow the perception is going to be that we no longer care about people making their own way or finding success in their own way. Not everybody can do that, and we have an obligation to help.
What about the term democratic capitalist? This is a term we heard recently from candidate Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Does that mean anything to you, Jerry?
Not particularly, interestingly. I think he's terrific. I think he's great, but that did not resonate.
What about for you, Eric?
That's the first time I think I've heard it, but I have a sense of what he means, and I think he's finding that balance between a capitalist sort of foundation, but a democratic and perhaps even a socialist way of thinking about us all being in this together. I think when it comes to the conversation about socialism or democratic socialism, there's a lot more narrative than there is understanding. And I think people have been using some of those terms to beat other people down without thinking about the things that are meant by that. I mean, I think, you know, we have socialized roads, we have socialized education, we have a lot of socialism selectively throughout our society, but there are certain things that seem to be untouchable when it comes to making them more socialized, like healthcare. And I think it's a debate that's not really being held in a way that is giving all of the ideas a fair chance, because people are so quick to label things and kind of put a poison pen on them.
Krista, you're nodding to this.
Yeah, so the labeling is exactly it, and it's almost like a conversation stopper. So if you can, as you were saying, if you can talk about those individual issues, the things that we do enjoy as a country, you know, air traffic controllers and the interstate road system that we all, I mean, that was how I got here today. It comes in handy. But then talking about how those might look applied to other systems and other areas. And to me, Pete Buttigieg's idea is sort of a bringing together that idea of every man for himself versus we're all in this together, and how can we blend those two ideas to yield the strongest country that we can have.
Jerry.
It reminds me of a few elections ago. I saw a woman in her 80s, she defined as being in her 80s, with a sign that said, "Do not want the government involved in my insurance." And I said to her, "Oh, does that mean you don't have Medicare?" And she said, "Oh, I absolutely have Medicare, and I love it, and I do not want the government involved in it." Clearly a lack of understanding that that is who runs Medicare. So I think, again, we have perceptions that are not clear, and maybe that's our problem, is we're not defining them and explaining them as we should.
What about the terms progressive and liberal? Are those synonymous? Alessandra's shaking her head no. Why not?
I just think there's a big difference between pandering to issues and I don't know. Like, there's like, I generally define liberals as more centrist Democrats that like think they're pretty leftist, but they're not. Like, to be progressive, like, you need to be committed to these issues that might not be bipartisan, and I think liberals are still trying to work across the aisle and things like that. I mean, we need to work across the aisle, but we also need to not be afraid to push buttons and push the party further to the left and to like the needs of the country. Like, there's just a lot of focus right now on remaining civil, trying to show that we're like better than the other side, and I see progressives pushing the party to be more radical in what we need to be. And even if we don't elect a progressive candidate, like, those candidates still have a role to play in pushing the liberal centrist candidates to be more representative of the actual party supporters.
Mm-hmm. What about identity? Identity is a loaded word these days, and depending on who you ask, the identity is either very important or not important at all, referring here specifically to gender, sexual orientation, race, even class. How important is identity? The identity of the candidate to you, Eric?
The identity of the candidate is not important to me. What's important to me is that they understand that everybody is coming to their issues with their own identity, and their identity informs the way they think about those issues. And so to understand that there is no monolithic American, that there's a lot of different identities that go into who we are as a country, and that we need to understand that difference and think about policies that take that into account.
We've gone historically from the melting pot to the salad. The melting pot was assimilate, and we should all be very much alike. The salad idea, metaphor, is now you get to be who you are, your own identity, and work with everybody else for us to have a community that works. And so I think it's rather than a candidate saying, this is who I am, so that vote for me for this reason, this is who I am. That does not mean that I'm not going to support who you are.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you all before we have to sign off for the day. You haven't made up your minds yet, but who's on your short list? Maybe we'll start with you, Christy. Are you able or willing to say who's on your short list?
Sure. Why not?
Okay.
You asked me here for a reason.
Yes.
So it's not a very short list, but I have Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg, Andrew Yang, who we didn't really mention today, and Joe Biden is hanging in there.
Hanging in there. Not off your list yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Alessandra, who's on your short list?
I'm basically between two at this point, although I'm still waiting to see how the debates play out. But I'm going back and forth between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. The organization I work with, Rights and Democracy, is going to be hosting a presidential people's forum on October 13th. And we're going to have both of them and a few other candidates discussing the issues that we talked about today and being asked those questions by people. So I'm interested in seeing how they have that conversation with each other.
Great. Jerry, your shortlist.
At this point, together, they're one perfect person.
Okay. And Eric?
I guess my shortlist, I'd say Warren, Harris, Booker, and Sanders.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all for being on the program today. It's been great hearing your perspective. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Eric Ratanoff, founder and chief storyteller with Story First, a strategic storytelling firm. Jerry King, social psychologist and organizational consultant based in Concord. Alessandra Murray, a student at SNHU and a volunteer for Rights and Democracy. And Christy St. Laurent, physical therapist, a member of the New Hampshire State Committee on Aging and chair of the Windham Democratic Town Committee. You can hear this conversation again on our podcast or find it at nhpr.org. And as always, this conversation continues online on Facebook and at nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Michael Brindley is our program manager. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our public radio fellow is Ali Oshinsky. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. And regular host Laura Kanoy will be back tomorrow for The Book Show. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.